Hello and welcome to Sci-Fi Noise. This is a, I don't know, this is kind of embarrassing. Now, if you remember back in episode 2, I was supposed to have a segment on defying gravity, but I forgot and put out an incomplete episode, all right? So that's when I had not Sci-Fi Noise number 1, where I explained how I put the show together in pieces and how I forgot a piece and didn't even realize it until, you know, months later. And I apologized for it. It was called a very, was it a short but sincere apology. And I even mentioned it on the last episode how I messed up and I was going to go back and talk about defying gravity at one point or another simply because of that big screw up. Well, this is the next chapter in that particular saga. It turns out that I did mess up. The show that came out as episode number 2 was not supposed to come out. Now that I think about it, I believe, I'm not even 100% positive, because I found the lost episode, and that's what you're about to hear in a second. And as you can hear from the way that it's set up, the way that it's composed and all that kind of stuff, there's absolutely no way that this was supposed to be in segments. So I have no idea what I was talking about, especially with episode 2. This is what I think happened. I think that I originally planned to make it in segments, but then I changed my mind and decided to do one long episode, which although technically is still in 3 pieces, but you'll see why later. And I just completely forgot about it and used the bad version. Anyway, this is episode 5. This is the lost episode, basically. This was originally supposed to be episode 2 or 3. I don't even know now, so I'm just going to put it up here. Hopefully you like it. It's almost an hour long from, you know, once I quit talking. And like I said, I hope you like it. I give all my contact information in a few minutes, a few seconds, actually. So let me know how you feel about it. And I'm not even going to apologize for it anymore, because every time I apologize, it turns out that I'm apologizing for something. I don't even know why I'm apologizing, so... No apologies, just a lost episode. Thanks. This show contains language and themes that may be considered offensive to some. Please use your best judgment about whether or not you should be listening. Welcome to Sci-Fi Noise. I'm your host, Derek Howard. Sci-Fi Noise is a part of the Deliberate Noise Network and can be found at deliberatenoise.com/sci-fi. For more details about all the shows in the Deliberate Noise Network, please go to deliberatenoise.com. There you can find links to all the shows in the Deliberate Noise Network, with the exception of Sci-Fi Noise. I just haven't gotten around to making the actual banner and link. But if you go directly, deliberatenoise.com/sci-fi, you can find it. There you'll find links to all of the one episode. Two episodes, I think. I can't remember. But you find all the links to all the episodes for this show so far. Now, well, I guess the reason I keep just doing a cold open like that is because I guess it's just because I'm a creature of habit. And one of the shows that I do that I usually just start recording, just turn on my recorder and start talking, is
comic book noise. And the reason I do that is because I already have the intro and the outro pre-recorded. If I ever need to make some changes, then I'll just go in and re-record little parts. But for the most part, you know, it's not necessary. Like I said, I'm a creature of habit. I don't make too many changes to the setup, so I don't really need to make a whole lot of changes to the intro. Also, because I'm a creature of habit, like most people, I usually spend my time watching a certain amount of television shows. And depending on what I just happen to be into at the time, I can go whole seasons or two really being into one show, you know, or two or three shows. And those would be the only ones that I watch, pretty much, outside of, you know, the news and sports shows and pro wrestling. But for the most part, I'm just usually doing something else. I do watch a lot of TV, I suppose, but it's always in conjunction with something else. Very few shows just capture my my full attention and nothing else. The Wire was one of those shows. The Shield. Sons of Anarchy is another one of those shows. Because I put a very high premium on the shows that I do watch, there have been shows that I have given up on, you know. I usually do that very quick, very easy. In fact, there are some shows that I'll watch a show for season 2, 3, 4 even. And then all of a sudden, I'm just like, you know what? I'm done with this. You know. 24 was like that. 24 was a show I was really into with those first 2 seasons. The 3rd season, I was really into it. Not as much as the first 2, but I was still into it. And then the 4th season, I got like 3 episodes in. I was like, yeah, I'm done. I can't watch this crap anymore. There was a show, a very recent show, in fact, that I gave up on really quick. It was Fringe. Fringe is a show on Fox, and it just, when I first started watching it, and for those of you who don't know, it's about a group of people who work for the FBI. Not all of them are FBI agents, but they work for the FBI and they investigate fringe science, okay? And it seemed to me that it was basically the X-Files if the people in charge actually believed Fox Mulder, you know, and they found out that a lot of the stuff that he was investigating was true. And that's just what, it just had that very X-Files-y feel. Now, X-Files, coincidentally, is one of those shows where the first 2 seasons loved the X-Files. 3rd season loved the X-Files. Around the 4th season, I was like, you know what? If I never watch this show again, I'll be a happy person. And I didn't. I think that, you know, in the middle of the 4th season is when I stopped watching altogether. I know that Mulder and Scully ended up leaving the show and they replaced them with a couple of people who I heard were pretty decent. I heard the actors were decent, the characters were decent, and in fact, if they had debuted as those characters, then maybe the show, you know, it wouldn't have been like such as big to do. But because they weren't Mulder and Scully, a lot of people just turned on it. I am actually kind of interested in going back and watching the last, season and a half of X-Files, just to see how it was. Because, like I said, I totally just washed my hands up. It was like X-Files, Schmesh Files, who cares? But Fringe was one of those shows. I watched the first 3 or 4 episodes, and then I was done. I was like, you know what, this is too much like the X-Files. I just don't care. I don't care at all in any way, shape, or form whatsoever, period. But the end of the season, people kept saying, oh, this is really good. This is really good. You know, Fringe is one of these shows that just really, I don't know, it started off kind of slow, but it's really good now. And I was like, eh, whatever, whatever. But because I am a kind-hearted soul, I decided to check it out at the beginning of the second season. And I'll do that for shows that I was kind of on the fence about dropping. The Prison Break. I love the first season, well, the first half of the season, because remember they had that big break. Love the first half season. Didn't watch it after that, you know. I didn't watch them break out of the prison. I didn't watch the second season where they ended up in a different prison. But all of a sudden, one day, I just decided, yeah, let me check it out again. And then I was hooked up until the very end, you know. So I am, like I said, a very kind-hearted person. I will give television shows a second chance. And I quit watching Fringe because it reminded me of another show that I just didn't like. So, you know, I'm willing to give it, you know, I'm willing to be magnanimous and give it a second chance. And I watched it in that first episode of the second season really grabbed me, you know. It just really just grabbed me by the throat and said, you will like me. And I was like, yes, I do. I do like you. And now Fringe is one of those shows that I actually will get upset if I miss, you know. Oh, there's another show that I mentioned. Ah, yeah, the other show that I wanted to mention that I didn't quite give up on it. I was really, really close to giving up on it, and that was Dollhouse. The first few episodes just weren't doing it for me. I think I may have even talked about this, but I gave it a second chance, and, you know, now Dollhouse is actually another one of those shows I really get bent out of shape if I miss it. And I realized that, at least with Dollhouse, what the problem was, okay? What the problem was, and also with Fringe, kind of because this is a Fox show, I keep forgetting that Fox doesn't really want their sci-fi or just kind of genre shows like that to succeed. So, you know, for whatever reason, I don't know why. One of their first big major hits was X-Files, you know. You'd think that they would go back to that well. You know, I don't know. But, you know, Firefox is another one of those shows. Drive really, to me, Drive could have turned out to have some, if it had had some sci-fi type elements to it, I would not have been surprised whatsoever. However, that was another show that didn't get a chance. And I keep forgetting that that's what they do. Fox will take these shows, and if they don't immediately start putting up numbers like House or 24 or American Idol, which are their, if I'm not mistaken, their three top rated shows, then, you know, then they're considered failures, and who cares? You know, who gives a shit? And another thing that they do, especially with Joss Whedon shows, is they like to shuffle things around. It's like they almost don't trust him to tell a compelling story that builds up over time. What they want to do is say, well, hey, you know, we got to grab the audience. We got to grab them quick. When most of the people who are going to check out a Joss Whedon show are really going to check it out on the strength of the fact that it is a Joss Whedon show. Just let him do what he wants to do, and everything will be just fine, you know. With Firefly, they switched the order, the airing order of certain episodes around. They did this. I believe they did a similar thing with Dollhouse. And in fact, I know that the very first episode had this really long, drawn-out motorcycle scene that just it seemed like it was just almost just, like, rammed in there for no good reason. And it pretty much the suits said that they wanted to start the show off, you know, exciting, and that's what they chose to start it off with, right? But it kind of built, you know, the first season kind of built to this, you know, really good ending, you know. And then the second one came around, and I'm pretty sure they made a few changes to the second one as well. You know, because they just didn't, they don't trust him. And it's almost like I said, that when it comes to sci-fi shows like this, that the network suits don't trust they don't trust anybody. They don't trust the creators to actually tell a compelling story. And they don't trust the audience to really get that a compelling story is being told, you know? They want big numbers immediately, and they don't really, really want to have to work very hard for them, okay? Case in point is the show that I really want to talk about. You know, I've actually wasted all this time as a preamble to the show I want to talk about. And this is a show that I had absolutely no idea even existed until it got canceled, you know? And then all of a sudden, you know, there was this little hubbub above it, you know, about it. And I don't even know how I stumbled across it. I think it was like on a TV website, and people were talking about how this was a great show and it shouldn't have been canceled. I was like, I never even heard of it. And as you can tell by the title of this episode, the show is called Defying Gravity. And this time it isn't Fox who decided to screw things up, but it's actually ABC that decided to put out a great show, but then cut its legs off before it really got a chance to find its audience. I know nothing about when this show aired. All I know is that there were 8 episodes that originally aired out of like the original 13 order. And I'm telling you right now, I saw all 13 episodes. The show is so damn good. so damn good. If you are one of these people who saw the first few episodes, one of the lucky few who saw it when it was airing, hunt down those last episodes. It's totally worth it. There is a DVD coming out called the entire first season, where a lot of people are trying to drum up some support. Hopefully, if it does really strong DVD sales, then then the show can come back in some form, you know? And I really hope so. Now, like I said, I don't know when it aired. I don't know what kind of publicity it got, what kind of marketing push it got, because I don't really watch a whole lot of ABC shows. And when I do watch shows, I don't really, watch them on television. There's Hulu, there's the actual, you know, website for the different networks that show a lot. And they don't put, in between the little breaks, they will push stuff like, you know, non-smoking patches or whatever, or, you know, the latest car that I can't afford, or the latest sugar water that I don't drink, you know? They don't actually promote other shows. It's just the way of the world, you know? So I have no idea when this came on. For all I know, it could have came on Saturday night at 10 o'clock, you know, which is a horrible time. If you want to kill a show, network executives, Saturday night at 10 o'clock. All right. It used to be if you put it on a Friday night, then, you know, things were not going to turn out very pretty for that show. However, one thing that I've noticed is that for the past few years, Friday night's been a good night for sci-fi. Sci-fi Channel used to put a, you know, Doctor Who repeats on Friday nights. And, what's that show? Battlestar Galactica. now they have Stargate Universe, which apparently is getting some buzz. Dollhouse comes on Friday nights. A long time ago, X-Files used to come on Friday nights. So if you really want to get a cult show, if you want a show that's a slow burn that you know is not going to be one of those smash blockbusters, but you want it to do a slow burn, start it off on if it's a sci-fi show, start it off on Friday night, let it build up its cult audience, and then reward it by moving it to like a Sunday or a Monday. I mean, that's the formula that worked for X-Files, you know? And I believe, isn't it also the formula that worked for a Battlestar Galactica? I can't remember if Battlestar Galactica moved to Sundays or not. Anyway, the show is called Defying Gravity, and it is basically an astronaut story. All right? Now, I know how it was apparently pitched to the suits at ABC as Grey's Anatomy in Outer Space, which it is not. Alright. I know that they have to dumb stuff down for the idiots who spent most of their time, you know, working on their MBAs or whatever it is, whatever kind of business degree you have to work at a TV network, you know, because God forbid they put creative people in those positions, but those guys, you know, they have to be dumbed down, you know, the elevator pitch, I guess. But this show is not Grey's Anatomy in Outer Space. Yes, it's a bunch of pretty people and doing rather complex things, but it's not. Grey's Anatomy is filled with some really repellent people. They are not nice people. There's nobody on that show that is even remotely likable, okay? And the people who are remotely... I take that back. There's like one doctor. What's her name? Kate Capshaw's daughter. She is likable, okay? She's the doctor who works with kids. She's like the only one on that show who's likable. Everybody else... You know, they're quote-unquote broken, but no, they're just a bunch of assholes, okay? And on this show, on Defying Gravity, yeah, there are a couple of people who are assholes. They did asshole things, but they're likable, you know? There's a group of astronauts who are on this... this takes place in, you know, for what will be for me the far future... because chances are I'll be dead by the time this show, the timeline for this show. But this is a group of astronauts who are going on a tour of the solar system. And they have all their different personalities. And the show is really unique because it really tells three stories at once. Okay, it's a huge cast now that I stop and think about it. It tells what's going on with the people who are on the mission, but it also tells about the lives of people on the ground, you know, mission control, who, you know, some of them are the loved ones of these people. These are people who had trained with them but didn't quite make the cut. So there's not only do they want these people to do well, but at the same time, there's a little bit of resentment some people are feeling resentment for these, people who are up there who are going to be gone for 6 years. But at the same time, there's also a simultaneous story being told in not exactly flashback, but it's a story of when they were training, you know? So you see things like two of the characters, you know, the main two characters have this this relationship that predated them, you know, really being on this ship together. So every now and then, they will make a reference. And you're like, what are they talking about? And then you see how that kind of happened. There's a couple that broke up, and now they're on the ship together. It's really about the characters and how they interact, and not only how they interact, but how they interact with the enormity of what they're facing, you know, of the of their task at hand, if you will. Oh man. And it's just really, really strong storytelling, you know. And you would think that with just like six people, or no, not six people, it's eight people, maybe as many as 10 people, I don't know, that it could get almost, you know, boring and claustrophobic even. But no, it doesn't. I mean, everybody had a story, you know. And not only did everybody have a story, and of course, some people are going to have more airtime than others, but I wanted to know more about all of the characters, even the characters who had the most lines or the character had the fewest lines. I wanted to know more about the characters because it was, oh man, the strength was in the storytelling and the acting and the scenery and the fact that they actually made sense. One thing that has always bugged people about sci-fi stories, especially ones set in outer space, is that things don't float around as much as they should. You know, little things like, you know, I'm bald, so it wouldn't affect me. But, you know, people with long hair, why their hair doesn't float around. And they address that. You know, they address that in the second or third episode. Because, you know, I'm watching and I'm just like, okay, I'm just going to ignore that because everybody else happens to ignore that. You know, okay, yes, they can have artificial gravity, but, you know, the hair is still going to fly around. You know, there's still going to be stuff that flies around. And they explained, well, no, this is why that happens, you know. And they did it in such a natural, logical way, okay? Because they're going on this, basically this tour of the solar system, people are going to be interested. So they have one of the characters filming like a behind the scenes type deal, broadcasting it for school children back home. So they're explaining stuff that, and it doesn't feel like exposition, you know, it doesn't feel like, you know, you don't have two people standing around talking about, oh, yes, well, oh, you know, I'm really glad that we've got these magnets in our shoes or else we'd go floating around. Yeah, I'm glad we're not doing that, you know. No, she sit there, she's looking at the camera and she's explaining what's going on. And she does it in such a cheerful way that if this was real, I'd want to watch it. I'd want to learn more, you know. I mean, and it's little things like that, little details, you know. Now, I don't know about the hard science, of course, and quite frankly, I can give two shits about hard science when it comes to TV shows, because let's face it, they're not going to get it all completely right. I mean, I'm a by trade, and I guess by nature, I am a PC tech. I do PC support. I am a troubleshooter at heart, right? It drives me crazy when I see people, you know, hacking passwords and beep, 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 and all that kind of crap, you know. But I know why they do it, because really, to get somebody's password is a very boring thing, you know. 9 times out of 10, it just involves you calling up and say, hey, need to work on your computer, I need your password. And they'll give it to you. That's how people are. I think I told the story before about how there was a Windows screensaver password, and I had to figure out what that was. I had to get on this lady's computer, and I'm like, damn it, what is it? And then as I'm sitting there, the names of her kids go by, and I was like, it cannot be that easy. This is some TV bullshit right here. And guess what? Yeah, it was that easy. But to go on, You know, I'm going to have to stop. I wanted to do this in one shot, but this show really deserves to be really dissected. I'm going to try not to give any spoilers, but I do want to talk about the cast, the setting, some of the things I found out about it. But I will have to do that later. Now, I know I could just, like, pause it or just cough real loud and come back, and I'll be talking in a different way, and you guys probably wouldn't even notice. But, yeah, I'm just going to take a little break. Okay. This is several hours later. Actually, it's almost 24 hours later. The cast of Defying Gravity, trying to do this off of memory, because even though I had plenty of time to actually print out the IMDb page, I completely forgot. I'm trying to think, the biggest stars, on the show would have to be Ron Livingston. He plays Maddox Donner. Yeah, I think his is like the only name I can remember. Maddox Donner, which is actually kind of funny because one thing they say is that his first name, Maddox, was named after Hall of Fame pitcher Greg Maddox, who was, you know, he had been around for, like, a long time. And as far as I know, and I could be wrong because I've actually quit following baseball for a while, but I don't think Greg Maddox is in the Hall of Fame. If he is, somebody, please let me know. I think it's one of those nods where it's like, you know, let's get this guy whose name is unique and is known, but he's not... You know, he's been around for a while. He's not one of these rookies who we probably could name, but nobody would, like, ever hear of or whatever. I thought that was, like, a kind of a cool touch. He's probably most well-known for his role in Office Space, which is the Mike Judge film. And he was also in Band of Brothers, which was about World War II. I'm trying to remember if I've ever seen him in anything that was sci-fi related, and I'm coming up blank. That's not to say that he hasn't, it's just it's not coming to my mind rather easily. The female lead, Zoe Barnes, I believe, is played by Laura Harris. Now, Laura Harris was on, the first time I saw her was on this show, I think it was like a Nickelodeon show or something called 15. This was a long time ago, and she was very, very wooden, very, 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 very child actor who doesn't really want to do it, but she wants to make mommy happy type of deal. So, you know, she's really not putting her all into it, but anyway... She was not very good, you know, but I was like, I don't even know why I was watching. It was like a preteen soap opera or something. I don't even remember. It must have been when I was unemployed. She was also in this show called 24. She played a girl who had, you know, a nice suburban girl. Who gets involved with terrorists. And I think she's like one of the few people who Jack Bauer didn't torture. Or he might have tortured her. Who knows? Once again, you know, she's been in a bunch of other things, but I cannot remember her being anything sci-fi related. Malik Yoba plays Ted, whose name I don't know. Now, Ted, Malik Yoba, was actually easily best known for his role in New York Undercover. And New York Undercover is one of those shows that, for some odd reason, isn't really looked upon very fondly by the network, and the network was Fox. Even though New York Undercover was one of those shows that kind of helped make them, okay? Of course, there were early shows like the Tracy Ullman Show and The Simpsons and... right on the tip of my brain. X-Files, of course. There's one in particular. Married with Children, did I already say that? I think that's the one I was thinking of. Anyway, but those were popular, but they didn't really, like, help push them over the edge. But what really showed a lot of people that Fox could have staying power was New York Undercover, because one thing that I remember about the show, because I watched it, but I didn't really watch it, because I think I was working Thursday nights, so I really didn't watch a whole lot of TV. But I remember reading a news story where it was surprising to the reporters and such that the number one show at the time, I believe, especially on Thursday nights, was Friends. The number one show amongst blacks and Latinos was New York Undercover. You know, and they were acting like, you know, this is like some really, you know, shocking thing. And, you know, and it's helped kind of legitimize Fox, although I got comments on that a little later. But, you know, it's, yeah, you know, let's see. You have... on NBC, a show about six white New Yorkers with absolutely no minority friends or acquaintances or coworkers whatsoever. And on the other show, you had the two leading men were black and Latino. Where do you think the black and Latino audience are going to flock to? You know. And for a while there, like I said, they were adding legitimacy to Fox, you know. And Fox did have a lot of black shows around that time. And then like UPN and the CW would do much later, because, you know, they kind of took the same formula. They got the black audience. They had the black shows that cultivated the black and minority audiences, period. And then once they started to make inroads, then they just kind of got rid of all the black shows, you know. But by that time, you know, once you have people used to turn into a certain station, then they'll turn and they'll watch whatever crap is on. You know, that's how this whole thing started, about people being into certain patterns, they get lazy. But Malik Yoba was on New York Undercover, and it's one of those shows, like I said, that very rarely gets talked about. Once again, I don't think he's done anything else in the sci-fi genre. I could be wrong. In fact, I'll probably get home and look on IMDb and find that all these people were in all a bunch of stuff. Another character was played by Christina Cox. Now, Christina Cox, she was on the show. It was a Canadian show about a vampire. And it wasn't like Forever... was it Forever Night with Benny Hill in it? The guy who looks like Benny Hill, I should say. But it was a one where she was like a private detective or something like that, who was friends, you know, and like a kind of romantic interest with a vampire. And that's like the closest one that I can think of on the entire audience, of the entire ensemble cast I can think of, who has any kind of connection to the world of sci-fi slash horror slash, you know, that kind of genre that we're into. I wish I could remember the name of the show. It wasn't True Blood, but it had blood in the title. I think it was like Blood Ties or Blood Oath, something like that. Oh my God, I wish I had a much better memory. And I realize some people say, well, you got a better memory than me. Maybe, but my memory is still, you know, like the song said, my brain is like a sieve. Because I can't even remember the name of her character. All right. And the only other cast member who I even remember seeing in anything else, although I'm pretty sure that, like I said, once I get home and get on IMDb, I'll say, oh, yeah, this is what this person is from. The other one is Parla Garces. She is the one who I mentioned who was doing, like, the classroom films and broadcasting, you know, what the what life is like on the ship back to the school, to the school kids on Earth. And she is basically, you know, her name could be Miss Exposition, but it's not really kind of, you know, obnoxious exposition. She was on The Shield, which once again is not sci-fi related, but what really stands out about her and her performance is the fact that she is so gorgeous. I think she is so beautiful. Yeah, and I just wanted to work that into the show somehow. Yeah. Anyway, the show itself, like I said, dealt with this ship that's going around to all the different planets in the solar system. They I don't want to spoil things, but it turns out that the mission that they thought they were on is not the mission that they were really on. It's all I really want to say, because I really want people to pick this up on DVD, on Netflix, even if you have to, you know, use other means to get it, like go to Hulu, because I'm pretty sure it's still on Hulu. It's that good. I mean, it's one of those shows where I feel as though I could watch it again. I've seen all 13 episodes, and I really do want to see them again. So I might pick up the DVD. And I would really suggest anybody who's listening to this, if you like good sci-fi, to pick up the DVD, because it's one of those things where maybe, just maybe, we can pull like another Firefly. Because, you know, Firefly came back strictly on the strength of DVD sales. So, you know, and it was just a movie, and the movie kind of tanked. But still, hopefully, enough people will pick up the DVD, and then they'll say, well, you know what, maybe we can bring it back as a mid-season replacement, you know, maybe, because it looked like it's an expensive show to make, but I think it's like four countries combined to team up to make this thing, and it's really worth it. It's really good storytelling. It's one of those shows where, oh, I kind of gave you the breakdown of the storytelling, where there's three different stories going on at once, and all of them are compelling, I just want to point out. But it's an ensemble cast, and it doesn't shortchange anybody. It doesn't shortchange on the writing, on the explanations. It's a great show. But like I said, it got canceled because it wasn't a smash blockbuster. It wasn't Lost, you know. And I think that's what ABC is using to gauge genre shows. I don't know why I keep calling it genre shows. I think that's because my buddy Aaron Makeham over at Sci-Fi Dig, which, by the way, I will freely admit is a much superior science fiction podcast to listen to. He is a lot less rambly than I am, even though his shows are a lot longer. My ramble factor is a lot higher, but you know, if you listen to this show, chances are you listen to one of my other shows, so you know, rambling is sort of my milieu. Anyway, I think that what they do is they try to compare everything to Lost. And Lost is such a unique creature that you can't, you know? So they, I guess, I think that's one of the reasons why they tried not to push it as, you know, Lost in space. You know what I mean. It's, you know, it's Grey's Anatomy in space instead of Lost in space, even though, like I said, these characters are interesting and and likable and appealing, where the ones on Grey's Anatomy just happen to be there every week now, you know. I'm trying to think, where would I place this up against other shows? Other shows in general, I'm pretty sure I named some of my favorites. The Wire, excuse me, The Wire, The Shield, Sons of Anarchy, Friday Night Lights. I would put this up with them. I really would, even though those are all either canceled because they run their course or they're still ongoing. This one was definitely snipped before it could really get too far. I mean, because, and I'm not spoiling anything, but they only got up to, they went from Earth to Venus in 13 episodes. And that should tell you about the methodical storytelling. It wasn't, they could have just like rushed things, but they didn't, you know. This is the kind of storytelling that I wish they had done with Voyager. Okay, now I, unlike a lot of people, I actually liked Star Trek Voyager. My problem was with that show is that they ran into humanoid aliens, like I want to say like the second or third episode. You know, you really didn't get enough chance to explore these characters before we were, you know, introduced to like whole new races and all that kind of stuff. And then it just felt familiar. It felt like just another part of the Star Trek universe when it should have been something unique. It started off as something, you know, unique, and then it just, like I said, just became another, just another show. But this show, but you know, and then I'm starting to think that this show couldn't have been made without something like Lost, where they kind of relaxed a little bit and let the story unfold. Now there were secrets in this show, but they weren't like dragged out forever like some of the secrets are on Lost. Most of the major mysteries that were introduced in the first few episodes were kind of like answered by the time you got to the end of the run, you know. I really want to start spoiling shit, but I'm not going to. Maybe when I pick up the DVD, and notice how I went from I might get it to, yeah, when I pick up the DVD. Maybe when I pick up the DVD, I will then do a episode-by-episode look at the show. I mean, it's only 13 episodes. That's just like so much in each of those episodes. And that'll be like completely chock full of spoilers. And if you don't know, you know, right now it's one of those deals where it's like I'm recommending the show, so you don't really, you know, it's one of those things where you might be interested based on my recommendation. I hope you are. I hope this like piques your interest. Even if you don't like Ron Livingston or Laura Harris or Malik Yoba or Christina Cox, or I don't know how this could possibly be, Paula Garcia's, or Garcia, however you pronounce her last name. Hopefully you will just like want to check it out. Even if you have absolutely no interest in Grey's Anatomy and space, you'll at least check it out, just because I'm telling you right now, that description is bull. It is horrible. That description was made for smart people to talk to idiots, okay? And you're not idiots. oh, how can I put this? There's nothing else I can compare it to. You can't really compare it to Voyager, because Voyager, their whole thing was they were exploring the furthest reaches of the galaxy, even though, you know, they really weren't. It was just like every other, you know, they could have been going around, you know, piloting around Deep Space Nine for all the mystery and intrigue that was placed on that show. So it wasn't as artificially superficial, if you really want to go to it, as Voyager. It's much more about the characters, but that's not to say that nothing happens, because a lot of times, you know, character studies are really like, you know, nothing happens. There's this show that everybody raves about called Mad Men. That is just so damn boring. I mean, it's like nothing happens. That's like character study after character study. But when you finally get to like the last episode of third season, you know, stuff started to happen. So now I'm interested. I'm trying to think the best way I would. No, not even that. Because I see one of the best things I could describe it as would be like Space 1999, because, you know, you have these people, but not really. It's really difficult to describe. It's not like anything that's ever come before. It's not like a ripoff of anything. I really don't know how to describe it. Maybe. Nah, not even that. Because I'm thinking maybe the beginning of Alien, but written by Brian Michael Bendis. Not really, because even then, the beginning of Alien, you know, they were in suspended animation. These people are not in suspended animation. Oh, it's just, if I were going to write a, if I had a talent, and I were going to write a science fiction show, that was a character study about people, this would be it. I know that was absolutely no good whatsoever. It's just like a really intelligent, smartly written, superbly acted show. I don't even know what else to say, except, you know, oh, pick it up, see it. If you watch all 13 episodes and you do not agree with me and you think this is a piece of crap, then let me know. Just send me an email, Derek@deliberatenoise.com, you know, with the subject line, saw Defying Gravity and you're full of shit. And then, you know, I'll know what it's about. You know, that'll be our little secret code. Anyway, thanks for listening. The next show may not be a gushing love fest for, you know, a short-lived, canceled television show. But who knows? It just might be, you know. I might find those, I think, two episodes of Quark that I've never seen. Anyway, this has been Sci-Fi Noise. I'm your host, Derek Howard. DeliberateNoise.com is the website for the Deliberate Noise Network. DeliberateNoise.com/sci-fi for Sci-Fi Noise. Derek@DeliberateNoise. If you would like to send an email to that address. And one of these days, I'm going to actually learn the audio comment line. But I think I'll just stop here, and then the next words out of my mouth will probably be the audio comment line number and me saying goodbye. 734-274-5919. Goodbye.
problem, Brandon.